Cut the music. Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them. You throw your arms around them. You give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
All the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
It's like poison. Like rat poison.
Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. My name is Josh Parcell, the founder of College Football Country, CFBCountry.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. Appreciate you downloading and subscribing. Don't forget to go subscribe if you have not already. If it's your first time listening, thank you so much for checking it out. Today's episode will feature the JP Top 10, my top 10 college football playoff resumes through 8 weeks this season, and it's beginning to take shape. We're only a few weeks away from the initial college football playoff rankings being released, and I have my thoughts on who deserves those four spots if the rankings came out today. We'll talk about all of the top 10 in this episode, as I do every single week. Don't forget, the next episode will feature Reese Davis from College Game Day. I tweeted that out late last week. If you have a question for Reese Davis you want me to ask, I will do so. I'll pick one question from a listener or a follower on Twitter to ask Reese Davis. So get those in. Recording that episode Wednesday afternoon. So you have about 24 hours to get that question in, depending on when you're listening. But today's episode is the JP Top 10, and we're going to get right into it now, starting with number 10. Again, the top 10 resumes in college football. Not necessarily the 10 best teams in that order, but the teams that have the best resumes on paper so far. And number 10 is Kentucky. The Kentucky Wildcats right now sit with one loss in the SEC, one loss overall, 6-1, 4-1 in conference. And they got a 14-7 win over Vanderbilt. A close game, but also Kentucky's defense has been the story all year long regardless. They are the only team in the SEC to not allow more than 20 points in a game this season. Mark Stoops has that defense playing lights out right now, and the Wildcats are in great shape in that SEC race. They have Georgia coming up in 2 weeks. They have Missouri this Saturday, but I'll tell you this much right now, they are huge Florida Gator fans this weekend. Florida plays Georgia in Jacksonville. I'll get to that game in just a few minutes, but if Florida wins, Kentucky retains outright leads in the SEC East going into that Georgia game on November 3rd. So if they could get a Florida upset over the Bulldogs this weekend, Kentucky is in pretty good shape heading into that game against the Dogs next week. This is a crazy stat here from that game. This is a crazy stat from that game. Kentucky completed only 3 passes for just 18 yards. Terry Wilson is holding on by a thread to that starting quarterback job, but Mark Stoops did say this week that Gunnar Hoke might get some more reps in practice, might get some playing time on Saturday against Missouri. We'll see what happens there. But Kentucky, as long as they're running the ball the way they are and playing defense, they're going to beat a lot of teams in the SEC regardless. Missouri's got a high-power offense. This is going to be a test for sure for Kentucky, who's underdogs right now in that game. They did run it 53 times for 280 yards against Vanderbilt. So Kentucky, big two-week stretch for them. If they can get past Missouri as an underdog, they've done it before. They've been underdogs in several games this season and continue to win. They will have a chance to take on Georgia in 2 weeks with an SEC East title on the line, or at least first place. Number 9, welcome to the party, Washington State. How about the Cougars? They shocked me. I thought Oregon was going to walk into the Palouse and walk away with a win, but Washington State, this is what Mike Leach does. He just continues to build programs that are just so hard to defend, so hard to stop. And Oregon could not slow down Wazoo in the first half. It was a 27-0 game. Oregon nearly came all the way back. 27-20 was the score late in the fourth quarter before the Cougars pulled away with a late touchdown. 4 touchdown passes in this game for Gunnar Minshew. 4 touchdown passes to 4 different receivers. This Washington State team is loaded on the offensive side. It was Gardner Minshew, not Gunnar Minshew. I've got Gunnar Hoke in my head from Kentucky. But look, that game on Saturday, one of the best game day atmospheres that I've ever seen. You talk about some of the best atmospheres that College Game Day has ever seen. You're talking about James Madison comes to mind. Clemson in the mud a few years ago comes to mind. Being on the Navy battleship in 2012 was another great scene. They've had some tremendous scenes over the years. What happened at Washington State on Saturday ranks right up there with the best of them, because you talk about the tradition of Old Crimson flying 216 straight weeks, and then you just saw about 216 different flags flying in the background of the set on Saturday. It was electric. I love the West Coast college game days. You get them like once or twice a year where it's 6 a.m. local time. Fans have been camping out all night long, and they're probably still hammered from the night before, and they're already ready and rowdy to ready to go. It's just electric. And it was I can't imagine what it was like to be in Pullman all day long on Saturday. One thing to keep in mind with Washington State here, as they now lead the Pac-12 North race, they are 6-1, and they are right now technically second in the Pac-12 North. If you look at the Pac-12 North standings, they do come in second place behind Washington, but they'll play Washington at the end of the season, so that will be that debate will be settled come season's end if it comes down to that. But you know, Washington State now 6-1. Mike Leach, as great as he is and as much credit as he gets for being a terrific coach, he has won more than 8 games in a season one time. Only once has Mike Leach put together more than 8 wins in a season, and that was, of course, the classic year with Texas Tech and Michael Crabtree and Graham Harrell a decade ago. So Mike Leach, great coach. Let's see if Washington State can finish the deal. Again, they sit right now tied in the loss column for first place with Washington. They'll face the Huskies at the end of the season. The next few weeks for them include a trip to Stanford this weekend. The Cardinal ranked at number 24. I think Washington State can win that game, but Stanford has a lot to play for as well. They have only one loss in the conference themselves, so they're trying to stay in the chase for that Pac-12 North title. Cal the following week, Colorado on the road, Arizona. So Cal and Colorado, tricky games. And then, of course, Arizona-Washington. Arizona shouldn't be too much of a trouble for Washington State, but I worry about Washington come season's end. So that's number 9. Number 8 is Oklahoma. The Oklahoma Sooners still hanging around here. And I'm not burying the Sooners just yet. I hope you haven't either, because they have a terrific shot at the playoff right now. You've got Texas sitting at an undefeated 4-0 in the Big 12. West Virginia, Oklahoma, and Texas Tech all with one loss. Oklahoma controls their own destiny in the Big 12. If they were to win out, they would face probably Texas in the Big 12 championship game, and they would have a chance to get back into that college football playoff mix. So I have them at number 8 right now. They're also number 8 in the AP poll. Kyler Murray has been outstanding this season, and I'll get to more of him in a second because I want to talk about him and Tua Tagovailoa. When we talk about Alabama in a few minutes, I'm going to say what I think about Kyler Murray and his chances for the Heisman. I think that those odds should be a little bit better than they are today. They play Kansas State on Saturday, Texas Tech on the road the following week. That Texas Tech game will be very good. Oklahoma State and Kansas down this season. Kansas always down, but West Virginia at the end of the season. So a couple tough games left. Texas Tech and West Virginia, the trickiest games left on the schedule. Kansas State in Norman this week. I think the Sooners roll in that one. And that's number 8, Oklahoma. Number 7 is Texas. They are in first place in the Big 12. They play Oklahoma State on the road this week at 8 p.m., so a night game in Stillwater. And that game could be tricky for Texas because right now they sit again undefeated, first place in the Big 12. But Tom Herman has been notorious for winning games as an underdog and struggling when the target is on his back. Here's another chance. In their first opportunity after the Oklahoma win, they scrape by a decent Baylor team at best. Baylor is better than they were a year ago, but Texas still not a team that I'm putting a ton of stock in going forward. They have Oklahoma State this weekend. Now, the Cowboys have been pretty messy this season defensively. They had a big win over Boise State earlier in the year. They've really struggled ever since then. And then West Virginia the following week, and then on the road against Texas Tech. So this three-week stretch is going to be tough for them. Then they take on Iowa State at home, the second-to-last game of the season as well. We know Iowa State with 3 wins already over top 10 teams under Matt Campbell, certainly more than capable of the upset there. So Texas has a long road ahead of them. I think if there's any team in the Big 12 that I'm selling right now, I think it would be Texas. I think Texas is going to lose a game, maybe even 2 in their last 5. And look, they can lose a game. They can't lose 2. Depending on where that loss comes, they would probably make the Big 12 title game with only 1 loss in the conference. But if they were to lose 2 of those next 4 or 5, they could be on the outside looking in, depending on how everything else shakes out. Number 7 for me, number 6 rather, is Clemson. So Clemson starting to move up for me. This was the first week that I really thought that Clemson looked like Clemson. And I know they beat Wake Forest 63-3, and that was a thoroughly dominant win. But I needed to see them do it against a team with a little more meat on the bone. And NC State, I know the schedule was not the best over the first month and a half of the season, but the Wolfpack were undefeated. They were a top 20 team, and Clemson came in and dominated. They were 17.5 point favorites, and they won by 34. So, you know, you look at that, and you can tell that Clemson was dominant, even relative to the expectation. Travis Etienne is the story to me for Clemson. He now has 3 touchdowns in 3 straight games. He has 15 touchdowns on the season. That is tied for 8th most in school history already, and the Tigers still have 5 games to go. Clemson's rushing attack has been terrific. They are now running the football at a high level. They basically have decided that they're going to ease Trevor Lawrence along and rely on that running game to carry them. Lawrence was terrific as well against NC State, but it was that running game again. Etienne only had 39 yards in the game, but I really, really love the identity that Clemson has started to mold as a run-first team. They are outscoring opponents this season 294-94. So despite some early struggles against Texas A&M and Syracuse, I'm now a full believer in Clemson. I always knew the talent was there. It was never a talent thing with Clemson. It was, you've got to produce. And I used the analogy a week ago to teams like Florida State in 2014 and Ohio State in 2015. I don't care how much talent you have. You've got to go earn it. You don't win games in the recruiting battle. You don't win games on Rivals.com or 247. You don't win games in the preseason polls, how good we thought you were going to be. I think it's absurd right now that Clemson is ranked number 2 in the AP poll. I'm very curious to see where they fall when the College Football Playoff Committee gets together in a few weeks, because I do think there are teams with better resumes than Clemson. But they're number 6 right now. They're going to continue to climb as long as they keep playing well. I do think Florida State could be a bit of a trap game. It's going to be a noon kickoff this weekend in Tallahassee. That is not, you know, sleepy atmosphere, not a primetime game, not a game that's easy to get up for necessarily. Florida State's been down. You think Clemson might walk into that game thinking, well, Florida State, in the past, that's been such a huge game, but this year, Florida State, they're down. Their offensive line is terrible. They're getting blown out by Syracuse. We don't have to worry about Florida State. I think Florida State could give them a little bit of trouble. Florida State looked very good last week for the first time all season in getting that win over Wake Forest. Remember, they were dominating Miami for 3 quarters. This team is starting to figure it out. They're not a top 25 team, but they're certainly a team with the talent to stand toe-to-toe with Clemson if everything falls into place. I think that's a trap game for Clemson. I'm very curious to see how the Tigers respond in this one. ESPN's FPI has it as a 91% chance for Clemson to win the game. Florida State is a 17-point underdog at home at noon. I am leaning towards the Seminoles. I'll have all of my picks on the next podcast, but be wary of Florida State if you are the Clemson Tigers. They also face Louisville, Boston College, Duke, and South Carolina the rest of the season. Outside of Louisville, you have BC, Duke, and South Carolina, all pretty decent teams, none that would really put a lot of fear into Clemson fans, but you don't have a complete cupcake schedule. It's all average football teams that, if they bring their A game, could put a scare into Clemson. Number 5 to me is Florida. I love what Florida has done this season. You talk about the win over LSU and what that looks like today, having dominated Georgia the next week. I think the Gators deserve to be ranked in the top 5 right now. They're coming off of a bye. They have College game day heading into Jacksonville for that Georgia-Florida game. They are 3rd in the SEC in turnover margin. The defense has been terrific. Offense has been hit or miss. They're in the top 5 in the SEC in yards per play, but you know, Felipe Franks is a game manager at this point, not really making a lot of big-time plays at quarterback. You have Jordan Scarlett at running back, who's been terrific as well. I'm nervous that they're not going to be able to move the ball very well against Georgia, but I said the same thing about LSU, and LSU was able to move the ball against the Georgia Bulldogs as well. So I think this is going to be a close game this weekend. I think Florida and Georgia play a tight one. I do like the Bulldogs to win. I think Georgia woke up after that loss to LSU. There's too much talent on that Georgia team for them to let Florida walk in and upset them and ruin their chances at a college football playoff. So I think Georgia wins the game. And I'll tell you this, Georgia is coming off a bye. 2 weeks to prepare for Florida after that LSU loss. They've had 2 weeks to stew in that upset that could have ruined their season, but I don't think it will, because I think the Bulldogs rebound. And I think that this is a bad spot for Florida to be catching Georgia. I like the Bulldogs in this one, even though I think Florida right now deserves to be ranked in the top 5 based on what they've accomplished so far. Number 4 is Michigan, the Michigan Wolverines. I had them at number 5 last week. I'm bumping them up to number 4 this week. What did I try to tell you before this season? I said Michigan is going to win the Big Ten East. Right now, they are the favorites as it stands today. Ohio State getting knocked off by Purdue in a blowout. Michigan now in the driver's seat for the Big Ten East. And the big story coming out of this game, the final score 21-7, low-scoring game, defensive battle, exactly what we thought it would be, is what happened before the game. It's fascinating to look at what that first few minutes of that warm-up looked like now and the amount of drama and controversy that has surrounded Jim Harbaugh, Mark D'Antonio, and that rivalry. Michigan State walking out onto the field, locking arms, knocking over a couple guys on Michigan, including Devin Bush. And now you have Jim Harbaugh accusing Michigan State of coming out late to do their walk, and Michigan was already on the field and was allowed to be on the field, and Mark D'Antonio standing behind his team, smiling, laughing as it was all going on. SB Nation has an article kind of recapping all of the Zapruder film-like investigations that have been done on this pregame scuffle. But the real story that everyone was talking about on Saturday morning was Devin Bush, the Michigan linebacker, kicking up the Spartan logo at midfield and scraping it. And I was amazed at the people who had a real issue with that. I was amazed. You know, honestly, I saw the video before I saw the original Michigan State walkout that started the whole thing. And even then, before I knew about that, I had no problem with Devin Bush doing what he did. It's a rivalry game. It's part of what makes college football great is the trash talk and the kicking of logos. And that stuff's all harmless at the end of the day, but it's what makes rivalries so great, especially one as hated as Michigan State, Michigan. And then you add in the fact that Michigan State really started the entire thing with their antics a few minutes earlier. Of course I have no problem with it. If we're going to have a problem with Devin Bush, then we have to have a problem with Baker Mayfield. And I had a lot more outrage on Saturday over Devin Bush than I did when Baker Mayfield planted the flag of Oklahoma on midfield at Ohio State. And that's not even a rivalry game. I mean, to me, there is nothing wrong with what Devin Bush did. And I've heard a lot of people who were outraged about Bush that were just thrilled with the charisma and bravado of Baker Mayfield. It doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't add up. I have no problem with Devin Bush doing what he did. And again, it's a rivalry game. That's what happens in rivalry games. And Michigan went out on the field and backed it up, Devin Bush included. Chase Winovich for Michigan as well, talking about little brother and having to put little brother in their place and fans getting all ticked off about that. Look, Chase Winovich wasn't there 4 years ago. He wasn't there 5 years ago. He wasn't there for any of the Michigan State wins over the last 7 or 8 years. Michigan State has dominated that rivalry for quite a while, but Chase Winovich got the win today or on Saturday, and he has the right to run his mouth. That's what makes rivalry games great. It wasn't classless. It was none of that. It was fun trash talk in one of the emerging rivalries in college football. We think about Michigan-Ohio State, and that's always going to be the big one in the Big Ten, and certainly for those two schools. But Michigan State has made this Michigan game a true rivalry, and D'Antonio and Harbaugh have done their part as well. And it's great. It's all what makes college football awesome. I have no problem with it whatsoever. Number 3 to me is Notre Dame, and Notre Dame is the one that's in a really interesting place right now because you've got several conferences still battling with one loss or an undefeated champion. Of course, the ACC has an undefeated leader right now in Clemson. You would think they would get in ahead of Notre Dame or be ranked ahead of Notre Dame at season's end. In the Big Ten now, you're down to a one-loss champion at best between either Michigan or Ohio State. In the Big 12, you're going to have a one-loss champion at best. Pac-12, one-loss champion at best. SEC, undefeated champion in Alabama, most likely. So you really only have two Power 5 conferences with undefeated champions. Best case, you're going to have two Power 5 conferences with undefeated champions, and then you're going to have three, at the most, conferences with one-loss champions. I actually think that you could end up seeing a two-loss champ out of the Big 12 and the Pac-12, and if that's the case, Notre Dame's going to have no problem getting in. So as long as the Irish keep winning, they have Navy this week. Navy is down. This is not the Navy team we've been used to. They're struggling this season. Northwestern just needed a field goal to beat Rutgers 18-15. That's who Notre Dame takes on in 2 weeks. I know the Wildcats have played well at times. That's not an easy pushover game, but Notre Dame should get through the next 2 weeks. They didn't then take on Florida State at home. Just said Florida State's a trap game for Clemson. I could see the same for Notre Dame, although it's in South Bend. And then they have Syracuse and USC at the end of the year as well. USC going through some struggles. Syracuse, is not playing good football right now either. So I think Notre Dame's going to run the table. I do at this point. I know they struggled with Pitt a week ago, but I just don't see a team on this schedule that's going to jump up and clip them. I think Notre Dame goes undefeated. I think they make the playoff, and it's going to be a matter of who do they get in over. Is it a one-loss Big 12 champion? Is it a one-loss Pac-12 champion? I think that the debate could very likely come down to if Alabama's in and Clemson are in, which seems likely at this point, then you're going to have a one-loss Big 10 champion. I think Michigan or Ohio State come out as a one-loss champ. And then a one-loss Big 12 champ in best case, you're thinking Oklahoma or maybe Texas. Now you have to decide, all right, who is getting left out of those two? Of a one-loss Big 12 champion or a one-loss, of course, Big 10 champion? I would think the Big 12 champion maybe gets left on the outside looking in. But again, if it's Texas, that means they've beaten Oklahoma twice or West Virginia twice. I mean, you're going to have a lot of quality wins on their schedule. And of course, in the Big Ten, if it's Ohio State, they'll have wins over Michigan, Wisconsin, Penn State. I mean, they're going to have a ton of quality wins, plus that conference championship. Notre Dame needs to hope that some sort of chaos happens in either the Big 12 or the Big Ten. I don't think they have to worry about getting in over the Pac-12 champion. I think right now they would get in over a one-loss Pac-12 champion because that conference is so weak. I don't know that there's enough quality wins to go around on that schedule. But Big Ten and Big 12 could pose problems for Notre Dame. So they're number three right now. Number two in my ranking is LSU, and they are nipping on the heels of Alabama. How about those jerseys for LSU on Saturday night? That was an awesome scene, taking on Mississippi State and another thoroughly dominant game by this defense. I mean, LSU every week I feel like is the week where LSU is going to come back down to earth, and it just hasn't happened. They're now 7-1. And of course, that win over Mississippi State 19-3. And LSU's in really good shape now. So the defense was great. They shut down Nick Fitzgerald. They shut down that Bulldog offense. Now you wonder, if you are LSU, is playing close to Alabama enough? If they lose, let's say they lose by a touchdown or less, maybe even a field goal, if they're able to just hang with Alabama and they have two losses, is that enough to keep them in the hunt for the college football playoff? Because they're going to be out of the SEC West race. Alabama would all but clinch the SEC West with that game. It's essentially all but over. So now LSU is going to be guaranteed sitting at home on conference championship weekend. If they were to finish 10-2 with a very narrow loss to Alabama and then a loss to Florida, who that is a quality loss right now, would it be enough to keep them in the hunt for the playoff? I think a lot of chaos would have to happen, but I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility. If Notre Dame loses at some point, I think a two-loss LSU has a stronger resume than a one-loss Notre Dame, if the loss to Alabama is close. If they get blown out, none of this matters. But if they keep it close against Alabama, I think they have a case to be better than a one-loss Notre Dame. I think they could be ranked in the same ballpark. Again, you're talking about a two-loss, maybe conference champion of the Big 12, maybe even a three-loss champion of the Big 12. Like, we've got a lot of football left to play. I'm thinking just hypothetical crazy scenarios. There's nothing against a three-loss Big 12 champion. It could happen, given where we are at right now. Then you talk about the Big Ten. Let's say Wisconsin goes in and wins the Big Ten as a two-loss team. Let's say they upset whoever it is in the Big Ten championship game. Do we really think that Wisconsin is better than LSU, who would have had a blowout win over Georgia, blowout over Mississippi State, you know, win over Auburn, win over Miami? Miami, that game doesn't look very good anymore. But I think LSU would at least be in the conversation. I think a ton of chaos would have to happen. But they would be the strongest two-loss at-large we've ever had if they were to lose a close game to Alabama. Now, again, if Alabama goes in and wins by 28 or more, then this is not a discussion. It doesn't matter. But you're going up against a team that's as dominant as we've seen in college football in quite some time. And if you're able to even hang around them, that says a lot about your team. That's more impressive to me. If they go in and lose to Alabama by a touchdown, that's more impressive to me than, honestly, beating Auburn by one, which they did earlier this season. Like, you have to look at these teams against who they face, not just whether they win or lose. I mean, playing close to Alabama is more impressive than beating 95% of the rest of the teams in America. That's how good Alabama is. So a two-loss LSU, probably out. But if chaos starts to happen, I think LSU could work their way back into the mix. And they play November 3rd. The first college football playoff ranking will come out 3 days later. So we'll see what the committee thinks if LSU is able to keep it close. Now, I'll talk more about that game next week in terms of how I think it's going to shake out. My early thoughts, Alabama wins by at least 14. I think I saw Todd Furman tweet earlier this week. That's probably where the line's going to settle, right around 14. Feels like an Alabama play there. 14-point road favorite against a top-five team. That's amazing to me that Alabama will be a two-touchdown favorite against a top-five team in one of the most hostile environments in college football. That's how dominant Alabama is right now. But that game will be November 3rd. LSU is on a bye this week. Number one is Alabama. Not a lot to say about the Crimson Tide. They're 8-0. They covered in the first half again. 58-21, the final score on the road against Tennessee. Showed you the gap between where those two programs are at right now. Jeremy Pruitt is building. He's working. He's trying. But look, they don't belong in the same class as Alabama. And we saw that throughout the entire game on Saturday. Look, Alabama now has a week to prepare, week off. So 2 weeks to prepare for LSU. Again, that line's 14. I think that's probably the closest that this game could possibly be. I think Alabama more likely wins this game by 21 or 28. The thing that I want to talk about quickly that I touched on earlier is the idea that Tua Tagovailoa has already run away with the Heisman Trophy. Now, Tua has been so good this season. He has 25 touchdowns, zero interceptions. He's been tremendous. He hasn't played in the fourth quarter of a single game. We know all of the numbers. We've heard it all about Tua. They're averaging 54 points a game as a team. It is absolutely sickening what they're doing. I just want to ask a question. If Kyler Murray was on Alabama, if he just traded places with Tua Tagovailoa, would anything be any different? Would Alabama be worse? I don't think so. Would Oklahoma be worse? I don't think so. I think Tua and Kyler Murray are very comparable players. Tua probably a little bit better arm, more accurate passer, but it's very thin. The margin is very thin between those two guys. Kyler is a better runner. He's a better athlete than Tua. Tua is a great athlete, but Kyler is elite in that category in terms of speed and ability to move and run the football. I just feel like if you switch Tua and Kyler Murray, nothing would change. And in that standpoint, I think that while Tua deserves to be the Heisman favorite, I'm upset that he's a runaway right now. I feel like he hasn't done enough. Well, I don't think he could do enough. He's done everything he possibly could. But when you're playing with a team that's as loaded as Alabama and you're playing against a schedule that's as easy as what Alabama's faced, I just have a hard time just handing the award to Tua Tagovailoa. Now, he's going to go up against LSU in 2 weeks, and that's going to change things. If Tua goes out and dominates LSU, then by all means, he's going to be the runaway favorite. But I got to see him do it against a great team. And look, LSU has dominated, you know, Mississippi State, not a great passing attack, but dominated Mississippi State, held them to 3 points, held Georgia to 16. They shut down Miami early in the year. Of course, that doesn't look nearly as impressive again as it once did. But LSU defense is very, very good, borderline elite. And if Tua lights them up, all right, I will gladly let Tua be the Heisman favorite. But Kyler Murray was outstanding against Texas, and they gave up 48 points. He can't control that. If Tua had a great defense, or rather, if Kyler Murray had a great defense, Kyler Murray would probably be the Heisman favorite right now. That touchdown run he had against Texas that tied the game would have been his Heisman moment had the Longhorns not drove down the field with just seconds left and kicked the game-winning field goal. So Kyler can't control his defense. If Oklahoma had a defense, Kyler, I think, would be the Heisman favorite today, and Tua would have a chance to take back the lead against LSU. But instead, everybody's already handed the award to Tua, and he's got to do it against LSU. If LSU is able to corral Tua and force him into his worst game of the season, and Kyler Murray keeps playing the way he's playing, I think it becomes a race again. It'll be interesting. If Alabama loses somehow to LSU, it gets real interesting. I just don't know that Tua has proven yet that he deserves the Heisman Trophy because he hasn't had the chance to. There's nothing against Tua, but I need to see it against somebody other than Tennessee or Missouri or Arkansas. I got to see it against somebody else. That's all. I'm not trying to hate on Tua. I just think that we need to wait and see. You need to wait and see him do it against quality competition, which they'll finally face in 2 weeks when they take on LSU. That is the JP Top 10. We'll run through it really quick one more time. 1 through 10, Alabama 1, LSU 2, Notre Dame 3, Michigan 4, Florida 5, Clemson 6, Texas 7, Oklahoma 8, Washington State at 9, Kentucky at 10. That is the JP Top 10. Next episode will come out on Wednesday night with Reese Davis of College Game Day. So thrilled to talk to Reese. If you have a question for Reese you want to ask, I will allow one question. I'll pick the best one. So if you're listening, tweet it at me, at Josh Parcell, and I will make sure to pick the best one to ask Reese Wednesday afternoon when we are recording that. Thanks again for listening. Download, subscribe to the podcast, Tell your friends, tell your kids, tell your wives, tell your husbands, tell everybody about College Football Country. It's growing every week. So thrilled that you guys are along for the ride. I'll see you guys later this week talking with Reese Davis. For now, have a great week.